Hello and welcome to Cat's Tales. Now that the Cat's Whiskers studios have closed down in Manchester, I've come to London to help unpack all the Cat's Whiskers equipment for the opening of the new Radio 5 network, which starts in August. There's going to be loads more programmes for young people, and I've come to the BBC headquarters at Broadcasting House, here in the middle of London, to find out a bit more about the sort of programmes the Radio 5 team will be making, and to see if I can visit their new studios, which are being built here. You know, I bet they're waiting for me at the moment. I wouldn't be surprised if they put down a red carpet. Mind you, I can't seem to see it at the moment. I think I'll take the plunge anyway and go in and have a look around. Oh, goodness, these doors are heavy.
Oh. Sorry, you can't come in.
Oh, why can't I?
You can't, that's why.
Not even if I say please?
Not even if you say please. Not without a pass, you can't.
You mean as long as I've got a pass, it's all right?
Of course. You got a pass?
No. But please, sir, I've come all the way from Manchester.
Manchester, eh? Why?
You see, I'm Julie from Cat's Tales, and I've come to find out about the wonderful new Radio 5.
Famous Radio 5?
Yes.
Can't say I've ever heard of it. Here, Herbert.
Yes, Albert.
Have you ever heard of a Radio 5? There's a small female person here wants to find out about it. Says she's from Rats and Nails.
Cat's Tales.
What did you say?
Cat's Tales.
Really, miss, using language like that to me will not help you in your endeavours to enter the hallowed portals of Broadcasting House. Really, the young folk of today. I don't know what they're coming to. Cat's Tales, indeed. To a man in my position.
No, Cat's Tales is the name of the programme.
Aye, she's right. There's a wee memo here about her.
A memo, eh? Oh, that puts a different complexion on things. Hand it over, then.
Here you are.
Oh, my. Oh, it's from himself. Stand to attention, both of you.
All right.
The most important man in the BBC.
Not Terry Wogan.
No.
No one's more important than Terry Wogan.
Well, the second most important person. Here, see for yourself, Herbert.
It's from, Mad. Who's Mad?
Not Mad. The MDR, the Managing Director of Radio. He says, please let Julie in as quickly as possible, as we want to tell everybody about Radio 5, which starts on August the 27th.
August the 27th?
August the 27th.
Oh, it looks like a rush job then, getting Julie in.
We'll have to speed up all the usual procedures.
Pull out all the stops.
Zoom along in top gear.
Does that mean...
Aye.
We'll break all records for you.
Can I come in?
Well... all being well...
and with a following wind behind you...
you can come back next week at the same time.
And we'll see what we can do for you.
Next week? That's ages away. Well, in that case, I think I'll have to look around London. I know. I've always wanted to go on the River Thames. Yes, that's what I'll do. I'll tell you what. While I'm making my way down to the river, let's listen to a story from Bill Oddie. It's called A Cousin from Australia.
Mrs. Philomena Hall's phone rang one brick.
Hello? Mrs. Philomena Hall's residence?
She heard. Then came a very faint, shrill voice.
Cousin, in Sydney, Australia, Adelaide, Amy arriving, lunchtime. Can I stay?
Well, of course, said Mrs. Philomena Hall. Relatives from foreign climes are always most welcome. And then the phone went dead. Thought Mrs. Philomena Hall. I didn't even realise I had a cousin Adelaide in Australia. She smiled a superior smile. That'll show those Higgins next door. Then she put on her very best pink velour tracksuit. And she went out and bought a nice bottle of best British sherry. I'm sorry, can't stop to chat, she said as he passed Mrs. Higgins from next door in the street. Mrs. Higgins looked rather startled, because Mrs. Philomena Hall had never stopped to chat. I've a representative from the Australian branch of the family visiting later. Bye. Then she set to on the house. She removed the brightly coloured mugs she usually used for cups of tea, hid them in the cupboard. Then she got out her best tea service. She put out a row of books out on top of the sideboard, to give the place a cultured air. And she put a roll of specially soft pink toilet paper by the loo. Oh, how lovely. Then she sat down at her dressing table and lined up the mascara, lipstick, powder, rouge, eyeshadow, eyelashes, face cream, and 3 bottles of wrinkle remover. She was going to make sure that she didn't look any older than Cousin Adelaide from Australia. 2 hours later, she'd finished, and she put on her highest of high heels and went downstairs to wait. The door chimes rang. Bing-bong! And Mrs. Philomena Hall from Arcasia Road went to the door to greet her long-lost Cousin Adelaide from Sydney, Australia. She opened the door and gave a gasp. For the person on the doorstep certainly wasn't Cousin Adelaide. The person on the doorstep was a man, grinning from ear to ear and wearing the kind of jacket you could play draughts on, and clutching a huge cuddly toy. "Good eye, Phil!" he cried. Mrs. Philomena Hall looked behind her, and then she realised he was addressing her.
"Oh, I'm sorry, but I'm expecting my cousin from Australia."
"Well, that's all right," the man said.
You're not my cousin Adelaide from Sydney."
"Whoa, almost," said the man. "I'm your cousin Sydney from Adelaide. Ha! Sydney's the name, Adelaide's the place, you daft Sheila."
Mrs. Philomena Hall quivered from head to foot, and under her makeup, her cheeks went pink. How could she possibly face the Higgins now?
"Here, this is for you,"
said Sydney, after they'd gone in.
"Kylie the Koala! Lovely, eh?"
And he sat the huge, cuddly toy on top of the books Mrs. Philomena Hall had carefully arranged on the sideboard.
Do you take sugar?" asked Mrs. Philomena Hall.
5 lumps, please, Phil, and make 'em big uns," said Sydney.
He looked critically at the best tea service.
"Say, ain't you got anything bigger than that? I mean, I don't reckon you could get enough tea in here to wet a wallaby's whistle, hey?"
Mrs. Philomena Hall fetched her mugs from the cupboard. Sydney gulped his tea down in one go.
Stood up and announced, "Right in, Phil. Gonna show me round the neighbourhood sights, are you, me old girl?"
Mrs. Philomena Hall cringed. Out in the street, she cringed again. Only more so, for there stood Mr. and Mrs. Higgins from next door. Mrs. Philomena Hall wished she could fall down a manhole.
"Good eye," said Sydney. "Super little street you got here, innit?"
And on he went, chatting away to Mr. and Mrs. Higgins like he was an old friend.
"Here, hang about. If me old eyes don't deceive me, you're off to the rugby league game, ain't you?"
asked Sydney. For Mr. and Mrs. Higgins were indeed decked out with brightly coloured rosettes.
That's right, love," said Mrs. Higgins.
"Well, what we waiting for then, Phil?" said Sydney.
Mrs. Philomena Hall was waiting for the ground to swallow her up.
Isn't rugby sort of, rough? You know, especially rugby league."
"You bet it's rough," said Sydney. "Whoa, come on!"
So, Mr. and Mrs. Higgins from next door, Cousin Sydney from Adelaide, and Mrs. Philomena Hall from Arcasia Road went to the rugby match. On the terraces, Mr. and Mrs. Higgins from next door and Sydney laughed and joked and shouted. And Mrs. Philomena Hall, being the highest of heels, could see everything. And she began to relish the occasion. Occasionally she called out in a rather posh sort of voice,
"Oh, come on, you red pudding! He's a very nice gentleman, your cousin Sydney," whispered Mrs. Higgins to Mrs. Philomena Hall. "A very nice gentleman indeed."
And Mrs. Philomena Hall began to think that perhaps having Cousin Sydney from Australia to stay wasn't going to be such a bad thing after all.
Thanks, Bill, for that story. Now, I've managed to find my way to the River Thames, which, as you might imagine, is the busiest river in Britain. And we're going to find out much more about the river over the next few weeks. I'm going to travel right through London from one end to the other, looking at why the river has always been so important, stopping at some of the ancient landmarks and meeting some of the people who work on the river. My first port of call is here in Richmond, which is a suburb right by the River Thames. Because we're quite a way upstream, away from the centre of London, most of the boats that we see here are pleasure boats. I've been invited onto one of these boats by Ali Taylor of the Thames Explorer Trust. Well, I'd better climb on board because it's just about ready to go. Up we go, and over. Right, there's lots and lots of seats. I think I shall try and get a seat down the front of the boat. Ali, we're setting off now and we're going upstream, further away from London. It's very peaceful on this part of the river, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's a very, very different stretch of the river from down in the Port of London. It's a lot more rural up here. You don't get the industry and the buildings crowding up to the side of the river as you do down in London.
So what sort of things do you talk about on a trip like this?
There's, of course, as you can see, a lot of wildlife about. There's grebe and heron, mallards and coots. And there's also a lot of history. Further up, we'll be looking at Tufts Boatyard, which recently was in the news because of the Dunkirk boats. A lot of the boats that went over to Dunkirk collected at Tufts Boatyard at Teddington. And in fact, our skipper, Harry Ambler, who's the gentleman back there steering, went over to Dunkirk in one of the boats. And he was there for 2 or 3 days, I think, bringing men off the beaches onto the larger boats to be brought back to safety in England.
I noticed a lot of paths by the side of the river.
They were the old towpaths. Before the advent of the engine, boats had to be pulled around horses. And the horses used to walk along the towpaths with big bridles. There used to be a big tow rope, usually put round the mast of the Thames barge or the West Country barge, and they were towed up the river in that way, carrying all sorts of goods.
Do you have a lot of swans on this part of the river?
Yes, and in fact they're increasing a lot. A couple of years ago, the government banned the sale of certain kind of leads that were used in fishing because it was found that these lead weights were dropping off, sinking to the bottom of the river and mixing up with the gravel. And the swans were coming along and they swallow gravel, they take gravel in to help with their digestion, and they were ingesting these lead weights, and the lead would poison their systems. The swans would become paralysed and would die of starvation. So the government banned the sale of these lead weights, and now the situation's a lot better. There are 25% more swans than there used to be, so it's good news for the swans. They're certainly appearing in greater numbers. Look over there, there's a grebe with some ducklings. We're quite lucky to see that because they're quite shy birds, the grebes. There's a tiny little one there, beautiful. Look, there's a moorhen and a coot. Coots are rather silly birds. They build their nests in very, very odd places. Lots of my friends on boats have had coots making nests around their anchor chains.
There's some very large nests in the middle of the water as well, aren't there?
That was probably the nest of a Canada goose. They're taking over, rather. And there are far more Canada geese around now than there used to be. Lots and lots of birds over there. Look at that. I think they're after the man eating his sandwiches.
Do you hope to do more trips like this?
Oh yes, the Thames Explorer Trust wants to get lots of people out onto the river, including children. There's an awful lot to see and do. I think the favourite thing for most children coming on the boat is actually steering the boat. But there's lots to see, there's lots to look at. There's interesting history along the river. There's lots of wildlife if you like to look at birds and plants. And just lots and lots of different crafts and something happening all the time.
Of course, you spend a lot of time on the river, don't you?
I actually live on the river, on a residential boat in Chiswick.
So you actually live on a boat on the river?
Would you like to come back and have a look?
Well, while we're making our way to Ali's boat further along the river, let's listen to the first episode in our serial, The House of Arden.
Ever dream that one day your ship might come in, of suddenly having £100 or even £1,000 to spend just as you like?
Edred and Elfrida Arden, who lived with their Aunt Edith in Cliff House, overlooking the sea in a windswept holiday town, often dreamed that one day their ship might come in. Once the Ardens had been the great family of Arden Castle, but, sadly, their fortune had been lost way back in Oliver Cromwell's time, and by now the few remaining Ardens were really quite poor. The children's mother had died several years ago, and in the hopes of making their own fortune, their father and Uncle Jim had gone off to South America. 2 years ago, the dreadful news had come that they'd been killed by a band of brigands. Now, all that was left was Cliff House, and no money to live on. Aunt Edith, though, decided they would make money by taking in lodgers. Their only other distant relative was old Lord Arden, who was last heard of living alone in an old house by the ruined walls of Arden Castle, some miles away. And so it is that on this particular morning, Miss Edith Arden is busy in the kitchen of Cliff House, and hoping, for Edred and Elfrida's sake as well as her own, that one day their ship might come in. And that, as it happens, is the postman, bringing three letters. One, of course, is only the plumber's bill, and the other, a letter from a clergyman asking for half-price lodgings. But the third is the letter, and, as such, really the beginning of this story.
Oh! Oh, my word!
Is it bad news, Auntie Edith?
No, Edred, just the opposite.
What do you mean? What is it?
I think just maybe our ship's come in. I must go to London first thing tomorrow and see about it.
Oh, you will be back in time for my birthday, won't you, Auntie Edith?
Of course. I'll be home by tomorrow evening. It isn't your birthday until the day after, and I'll bring you back a present from London.
Next morning, when they'd waved Aunt Edith off on the 8:30 train to London, Edred and his sister set off on a journey of their own. Aunt Edith had given them permission to picnic on the Downs, but there was somewhere else they'd been wanting to go for a long time.
We ought to have asked if we could go today.
I'm not sure we should without permission.
But Auntie Edith has never said not to go there, has she?
No, that's right. I don't suppose she'd mind.
And after all, it is our castle.
It's not really.
Well, in a way. It's where all our ancestors lived back in the olden days. We could go by train.
And so, without further argument, they set off. And it was from the train they caught their very first sight of Arden Castle, ruined but still splendid. After the train ride, the two struggled up the steep cliff path and then stood looking up at its walls.
These walls, they must be at least 60 feet high.
Yes, but I can't see any way in. There doesn't seem to be a gate.
No. Look, there's an old man going across the field. Let's ask him.
All right.
Oh, come on, Elf, hurry up.
Now then, what is it you be wanting?
We want to know about
the castle.
Can we get in and look at it?
Well, I do have the keys, but...
I don't suppose anyone lives there anymore.
No. Old Lord Arden died a fortnight ago. The place is shut up till they can trace an heir to the castle. And who knows, eh? The new lord might have a chance of finding the treasure.
Treasure?
Well, according to the saying, there's jewels and silver hidden away in olden times. You've not heard the saying?
No.
When Arden's lord is not yet 10 and may not see his 9 again.
That's like you, Edred. You're not yet 10.
It's not my 10th birthday till
tomorrow. You want to hear this saying or not?
Sorry.
When Arden's lord is not yet 10 and may not see his 9 again, let Arden stand as Arden may on Arden Knoll at close of day. If he have skill to say the spell, he'll find the treasure and all be well. That there's Arden Knoll, you see. That mound up there.
But what the spell.
Ah, now, that nobody knows. They do say it be hidden in some book in the house up yonder. Tain't no good, though, because there's never been a Lord Arden who's not yet 10.
I suppose you've got to be Lord Arden to find the treasure. I mean, I don't suppose it'd do to be just plain Jack or John or Edred, because my name's Edred Arden.
What?
Yes, it is.
Here, let's have a good look at you. Aye, that's the Arden nose, all right.
Auntie Edith did say the old Lord Arden was a sort of distant relative of ours.
Was he now? Well, the old Lord not having any children, I suppose that'd make your father heir to the title.
Our father's dead.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. But that means you could be the new Lord Arden.
Me? But I can't be.
But Edred, it is possible.
Well, if I am, I'll say the spell and we can find the treasure.
You'll have to be quick about it. You'll be 10 tomorrow.
Well, I expect you and your sister would like to go and explore the castle. You can bring the keys back to me when you've done.
Oh, thank you.
That one's to the house.
But where is the house?
Oh, you'll find it all right. And who knows, you might even come across the spell as well. Stranger things have happened in that old place.
And so, Edred and Elfrida made their way up to the great grey walls of the castle. Turning a corner, they saw that there were 4 wooden doors set into the ancient stone, and so they tried all the keys and all the doors. One led to a loft where apples were stored, another to a cellar, and the third opened into a tower that seemed to be used as a pigeon loft. It was the very last door they tried that led into a long garden, at the end of which stood a narrow house. The blinds were drawn. The garden felt chill and quiet and smelt of dead dry leaves. And it was very slowly, and with a feeling of being on tiptoe and holding their breaths, that the two went towards the darkened windows that looked, the closer they got, like eyes firmly closed over some dark secret.
Well, I wonder what secret lies inside that house. There's no secrets in Ali's house, though it is a bit unusual because her house actually floats. Ali and her family live on a houseboat in Chiswick, and I've been invited on board.
Well, welcome aboard. Come and meet the kids.
Okay.
There's Lisa and Christopher over
there. Come over here, Mum. We're feeding the family the geese.
Right, we better go round and see what they're doing, haven't we?
Oh, my goodness, what a lot. How many are there?
I haven't counted them yet.
They like the bread, don't they?
Yeah. If my brother or me doesn't finish our breakfast, we put it out the porthole.
And do they eat that?
I think so, they might.
Yes, we've been feeding this swan.
It was very fierce, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And in the end, we had to shut the portholes because it kept poking its head through the portholes and trying to peck us. And we forgot the bathroom one, and Lisa was there cleaning her teeth, and suddenly this swan poked its head in through the porthole. Oh, look, now, here's a swan coming. No, there's a couple of them with 4 cygnets. Oh, the male one doesn't look at all happy. He's going to chase the geese away. Look.
Hey, have you got any more bread? I've run out.
No, I haven't.
Well, I tell you what, why don't we go inside? We can show Julie round.
Come on, I'll show you my cabin.
Okay, I'll follow you.
Ooh.
It's quite difficult to get into. It's a hole in the top of the boat, and the stairs go round and round and round. Right down to the bottom.
This is the galley here.
This part's the galley?
Yes.
The kitchen.
Come on, I'll show you my cabin.
Up the stairs. This is your bedroom, is it?
Yes.
They call it a cabin, don't they, when you're on a boat?
Now, this is my bed, and this is my brother's. And we've both got little shelves. And we've got lights and under here.
Oh, under the bed. Let's have a look.
We've got little drawers. Behind our shelves, we've got little windows called portholes.
What's the bed up there on, like a shelf?
Ah, the bed on the shelf is our spare room. So if you come and stay with us, you have to get a stepladder out and climb up there. And can you see Lisa's painted a picture, a mural, along the bed head?
As long as it's not too rough on the river, you don't fall out.
Well, nobody's fallen out yet, no.
Well, let's go back through the galley. You call it a galley, but it really is a kitchen and a dining room.
Obviously, if we were living in a smaller boat, a lot of people live on narrow boats, and space there is much more limited. But as this is a big barge, it used to carry coal from the West Yorkshire collieries down to York. So where we're standing here is in the hold, and this used to be full of coal all the time.
It's very wide. In fact, it's more of a square area than a long area. And you quite forget that you're on a boat.
Yes, a lot of people come on the boat, and it's still for quite a long time. And then another boat will go past and make a wash, and we start rocking around, and they're quite nervous, because suddenly they realise they're actually on a boat.
Dear. And there's another room, too, if we go through.
Oh, yes, this is the saloon.
The saloon.
It's our living room.
We've got a television and sofas, a rocking chair and everything we need.
How's the stove work?
With coal and wood and paper.
So you have to open it up here?
Yes.
Like that? Oh yes, and you put your coal and wood and paper in there, do you?
Yeah, and shavings.
Does it get cold on the boat then in the winter?
No, it's very snug and warm in here because of the stove.
Christopher, you live on a boat next door?
Yes, I do.
What do you enjoy about living on a boat?
You can move around, and it's not like living in a house when you're all still. And you can have a boat, and you can row in the boat, and you can go up and down the river on it.
We go to lots of things called boat rallies, and we have friends, and we just jump boat to boat, and it's like, and we can see our friends, and we stay the night on different boats. It's just like a big family all together. Once we went to our friend's boat called Lily, and we went up to France, and my brother and David had his birthday in Calais.
Is there very much to learn about living on a boat?
Well, you have to learn that it's quite dangerous if you go away, and you've got to remember to wear a life jacket.
When you're older, would you like to live in a houseboat or an ordinary house?
I would like to live in a houseboat because it's quite fun.
Yes, I would, because you can move, and in a house you can't. You're just sitting there all the time.
Well, thank you very much for showing me around your boat. And before we go, perhaps you could give us a question for our competition.
Can you remember earlier on we told you about the kitchen? What do you call the kitchen in a boat?
So what's the name of the kitchen on a boat? Now make sure you keep that answer, because each week there'll be a new question for you, and eventually you should have 8 answers. Later in the series I'll be telling you where to send those 8 answers. There'll be lots of prizes, and the winner of the first correct postcard that we pull out of the bag will be invited to come and see us in our new Radio 5 studios and meet some of the people behind the scenes. So it's important each week that you keep your answers somewhere safe. Well, that's it from me here on the river at Chiswick. Do join me again next week. Well, the ship's cat is saying that it's time for me to go, so I'd better put away my waterproofs, take off my life jacket, and head for dry land. So until next week, farewell, my hearties.
Cat's Tales was presented by Julie Mayer. The programme was produced by the Cat's Tales team. Incidentally, tomorrow afternoon in Listening Corner, you'll be able to follow the adventures of little old Mrs. Pepperpot. That's at 5 to 2 tomorrow on Radio 4 FM.